Hello and welcome to the final Albion Raw of 2018 here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are drinking tequila in association with OldFootballShirts.com.
Are we? Great.
Well, the Christmas period got off to a predictable start by losing to Bournemouth despite an encouraging away performance. And then on Boxing Day, we halted our losing streak by taking a share of the spoils in an entertaining encounter with Arsenal. Today, Everton provide our final opposition of the year as we look to go into 2019 on a high. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares. And as we look back over the last 12 months, we are delighted to be joined by Raw regulars, Andy Bass and Marcus Hancock. Merry Christmas and everything. And not quite Happy New Year, everyone.
I always like to the fact you're always a week behind the times.
Well... It's still 1986 in my head, mate.
I'll tell you what, that Palace game last week was brilliant. Oh, hang on a minute.
So, I mean,
do you realise we've played that theme tune now 450 times? I've worked it out. I mean, I was obviously a bit bored over Christmas. Since we took it's over 400 times we've played that. It's brilliant, isn't it? And people still don't know the words.
I've always said you're on the brink, Al.
We are. But you should actually, there does exist a recording of us singing it, and I say singing in the very loosest terms. It is actually only slightly in second place to Bissouma, which we did, which you can find on our social media pages.
Maybe you should do a podcast of outtakes one day.
I think we'd end up taking up most of the internet, I think.
If it's anything like the mic testing here, we'd be definitely taking off air
today.
Okay, well, I mean, it's 2018. It's been the year that was, and we're going to talk about that and review that a little bit later on. But first, we're going to talk about the last two games. We're going to gloss over the Bournemouth one a little bit because, although I've got to say, I mean, despite losing to PLB. it was an encouraging performance, and I think we probably deserve to get something out of the game. It's just two brilliant goals.
If you can't stick the ball in the onion bag, though, it's as simple as that. It's great that you can play, and Bournemouth, let's face it, were probably as bad in the first half as we were against Southampton in the first half. They couldn't get out of their half, they kept giving the ball away, and we just didn't capitalise. They scored a very good goal. James Brooks is obviously an up-and-coming player, but we just, you know, if you can't score, you're not going to get anything, simple as.
Yeah, agree. I mean, it was a positive. It was a positive first half. It was so rare to watch the Albion attack and basically be on the front foot in an away match for a change, which was a refreshing change. And but yeah, it all sadly came to naught. I think ultimately the sending off just sort of knocked the stuffing out of us. And to be honest, we never looked like getting back in it.
A sending off that was mistaken identity.
Sort of.
Well, sort of. But Dunk, I think Dunk did know he was in the book, and it was a, you know, it was a yellow card tackle. And
the second one was a yellow card.
And what can you say? You know,
it still doesn't. Just got dunked. It still doesn't change the fact that the first one wasn't him. So,
well, I know, but he knew he had got it.
It's probably a case for booking both Bissouma and Dunk for that, wasn't there? For that one, because I mean, I know Dunk's one. He just sort of stuck a foot out. I think I've got a feeling from memory he missed the ball. It was a genuine attempt to get him, but you know the bloke was going flying through, and you know, and Bissouma was walking a tightrope anyway. It was frustrating, but yeah, once you know you're on a yellow, you've got to be so careful.
I'm not going to get too het up about it.
Yeah, but it was also a game
because we got away with it for the next game.
But it was also a game that saw a rare start for Jurgen Lacazette, and if you put a square peg in a square hole, look what happens.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus, I mean, you know, first half performance. I mean, I certainly think he justified his inclusion, didn't he?
Yeah. It's interesting just watching. Knockout looks like a man who wants to get sent off at the moment.
Well, that's good. We're playing
quite
today.
Clearly it is, but yeah, quite yeah, exactly. After last year's debacle, and quite clearly there's something not right with him at the moment. I don't know. He might have fallen out of favour or whatever. But
Lacazette
is playing in his natural position. I think that he played at PSV as well.
Yeah,
kind of on the wide player. Not he's certainly I mean he's admitted
he's not
he can't,
a line leader.
He's admitted he can't hit the ball exactly, so he's definitely not a line leader. And some of the games that he played last season, of course, he was, guess what, leading line. And well, you know, that's not going to work. And that's not because he's rubbish, it's just he's not, he might as well play me up there. I can't play that position either. I can't play most positions, to be fair, but
yeah, but you give 110%. Well, I would put in a shift.
Yes, well, that's true.
You'd have a very good goal celebration. Admittedly, you'd be copying someone else.
Yes, I would indeed. yeah. Which we'll come on to later.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's leave that one there and move on to a more positive result, which was Boxing Day's game of Arsenal.
I mean, it was back to the Lacardia show again. I thought he was absolutely... Sorry, I mean, you know, just cutting across what you're saying here, you have to say this. For all the people who doubted him, for all the people who didn't think he could cut the mustard, for all those who thought he was rubbish, all bets are off now. Lacardian can do it. If he can't from now on, it's because either the system doesn't suit him, but it's not because he doesn't have the talent.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I agree. I thought it was absolutely outstanding. I thought it was very positive in that opening, certainly in the opening half against Bournemouth. That's two chances he's been given, and he's done well with both of them. And given the background of criticism that he's received, you know, he's not going to be impervious to that. He's going to be aware of the pressure on him to perform. And I think obviously he scored the goal, but he made contributions in other areas as well. He actually looked quite physical, and he just gave us a little bit of strength on that, in that wide position. And pace, the boy can run. I mean,
oh, yes.
In stark contrast to some other members of the team.
But also the
fellow with the fish thing on his forehead.
Yeah. But also the speed of transition as well, and his link-up play was absolutely fantastic.
I thought he had a really good relationship with Bernardo. They seemed to link up really well. And Proper would always drop into that inside position in front of him, which I think was, they played together at PSV, didn't they?
And
you could tell. I mean, there was he was involved. He wasn't in the games that he played last season. He was on his own, and he was cut off from the rest of the team. So the ball came to him. There wasn't anyone within 20 yards of him. He gets dispossessed. It looks like he's rubbish. This time he was involved. There were people around him, and that goes not just for Lacardia. That goes for any player on the team. The team has to.
To be fair, the number of times that Murray was isolated, probably going last year in the early days of us being the Premier League, and even sometimes of it now, the number of times that Murray was isolated and you'd criticise the rest of the team for it, and then Lacardia was doing exactly the same, and he was equally isolated, and he's the one that gets the bird for it, because Murray's got 100 goals and Lacardia's only got two. And you think, well, hang on. And also there's this whole ridiculous notion of a player being judged by their price tag. The price tag isn't necessarily a reflection of their quality as a talented player. It's a reflection of how much the club wants to prize that particular player away from another club.
Also, it's just the market price. It's what you pay. And like,
that's, and strikers cost money.
Yeah, 40 million for a striker is like nothing these days. I mean, it's like the old million quid or 750,000 tag. So I ignore
absolutely
that.
Absolutely. So no, it's, and your point about his relationship on pitch with Bernardo for that particular Arsenal game, and to a certain extent against Bournemouth as well. Bernardo is really, he's found his niche. I think he was brought in as a fullback anyway.
He's brought in as a left back.
He was brought in as
and
there is something about him. I mean, there was a couple of times he got a little bit sloppy. I think on a certain level you can understand it, because you know as the game against Arsenal grew and our confidence grew, sometimes it sort of lapsed into a little bit of overconfidence. But even when he did sort of lose the ball quite cheaply, he managed to recover really well.
He's been managed very well by Chris as well, hasn't he? I mean, they've all waited their chance,
and then
he started that game against Watford and he ended up playing in every position across the back, and it didn't.
Well, he was rubbish at right back.
Yeah, I mean, and but again, that's not necessarily his position.
No.
He is a left back, and it's just, as you say, square peg, and then all of a sudden, you know,
But I would say this also, as the game grew, and everyone can realise that the pattern of the game, you know, first 20-25 minutes, we were, you know, just doing the thing that they kept saying, oh, we're giving them too much respect, we're standing off them. Well, don't recognise it after the game, do it during the game. Then after about 20 minutes, it's like something happened and we just got into them. Arsenal did back off a little bit, and I've no idea why, and I don't care, but you know, our central midfielders, Proper and Stevens, who, let's face it, absolutely beasted them in the game earlier in the year, started playing. And Stevens, finally, you know, don't get me wrong, as a defensive midfielder, he's always been brilliant for me, and I'm a massive fan of his. Although, you know, the sort of the lunge against Cardiff was absolutely stupid, but he was actually putting on Hoddle-esque passes.
I mean, there's so much to talk about in this game, particularly with players who you would say might have not been at their best so far this season. I think I would say Stevens is one of those.
Yeah.
And a player that I might have had, you know, some criticism of earlier on in the season. By far and away, his best game for us in absolutely ages. His range of passing was absolutely incredible.
It took him a while to get going, though, didn't it?
And the one he put in for Solly March.
Well, that he lofted over the bar. Yeah, that was him.
I mean, just.
Where did that come from? Why can you do that all the time, mate?
Superb vision. As a friend of mine said, you know, Dale Stevens, he's so frustrated he couldn't go forward on an escalator. And he totally did that.
Absolutely.
He did go forward. And I hope Dale has taken some notes from himself, saying, look how much better you are when you're playing like that.
Yeah, and Marcus, we saw David Berber playing a lot further forward than we're used to.
I was just going to say that. Last couple of games, and certainly yesterday, the Arsenal game, I think Proper Red is probably one of his best games ever in an Albion shirt. Although, as Brett says, he's never going to score. It's just something about it. But, I mean, that pass that he made to... I know Lichtensteiner kind of headed it in the path of Lacardia, but that was brilliant, and I think it was the outside of the foot. He has got a very good range of passing Proper, and it's frustrating because we can see it and I'm sure Chris can see it, but because he has to play this sort of defensive role with Stevens, we don't generally see the real Davy Proper, if that makes sense.
I know what you mean, because he's up front, he's further forward for the Netherlands, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we don't see it for the Albion. But finally, possibly against Bournemouth and definitely against Arsenal, we've seen glimpses of... But then that tends to be Chris's style, because the team said that last year, that first half of the season, they kind of had the shackles on. And then in the new year, Chris took the shackles off a little bit. Yeah. And I think this is again...
If he does the same again this season, then we're going to be laughing.
Yeah,
but
there is quite. Yeah, that's exactly... Yes, precisely. Well,
there is a rule of thought that you know, we changed the away kit to green and we got more goals out of Shane Duffy all of a sudden, so maybe we should change it to orange next season.
Well, maybe we should. I mean, but again, I think Stevens has decided to wake up, because Bissouma, again, after a little bit of he did well against Liverpool, then he went off the boil a little bit, but he's young, you know. Yeah. And you know, when he bossed them, okay, and I know it was 10 men, blah blah blah, but you know, against Huddersfield and Palace, he looked a proper midfielder.
Yeah.
And you know, and at that point, you know, I think Dale probably thought, oh right, I do actually have competition for my place now. Absolutely. Whereas beforehand, he probably would have walked straight back in the team because it was Dale Stevens and that's what was happening. But now there is proper competition everywhere. And
there is a luxury element to Bissouma, because you know, the likes of Stevens and Proper, who are the first two on the team sheet for when it, you know, for the central midfield berth. When they're going to be playing the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea and Tottenham, those are the two that you want, the senior players, the ones who are sort of like been there, seen it, what have you. With Bissouma, he plays more likely when we have a bit more of an attacking intent. And what you don't do is you do the kamikaze stuff. As poor as Arsenal were, you still don't do the kamikaze stuff. So that's not to say Bissouma's a kamikaze player, but you make sure that you hold that central midfield. And Bissouma's just a bit... He can do the defensive stuff, but he's also a little bit, as we saw against Bournemouth, he's also a little bit, you know, still a little bit raw.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
You have
but
the trust in place.
Yeah. You're right, but he is only young. So
when we're playing the for want of a better term, relegation fodder, then that's hopefully more, especially
absolutely.
At home, then hopefully that's more Bissouma's game.
Yeah.
Okay. It was a poor goal to concede. I mean, it was it was key same cops, really, wasn't it? And the amount of chances we had to...
wouldn't look out of place in the with Dean years.
It wouldn't.
DVD.
Yeah. I was just expecting Colin Hawkins to pop up somewhere, but...
Dear Leon Balogun, Rose Ed, no messing.
Yeah, well,
to be fair, he did try that later, and the ball bounced off an Arsenal player and nearly went in. So, yeah.
Well, I suspect we'll see Dunk back to go.
I think it's Duffy, and
it was lovely to have Duffy back as well, because he's
winning headers with impunity.
Duffy.
The good thing is that Arsenal have midget strikers, so the minute they pump the ball up, there's only going to be one person who's going to win.
Absolutely,
that,
yeah.
And it's going to be Shane Duffy.
I don't recall him giving away any fouls either. Doing so, you know, the number of times that, you know, a player will come in and get clattered. I mean, let's face it, Glenn Murray knows how to buy a free kick, but their lot weren't cute enough to do that.
I don't think Glenn Murray does know how to buy a free kick. He never gets free kicks.
we would actually like the...
He's always fouled, and he gets given a foul against him.
Well, here's a question or a request for the Albion Media Department. If you could actually put a show reel together of all the fouls that should have been given against Glenn Murray, and then show one that has been conceded that he shouldn't have got, and I'd love to see it.
That's going to take up most of the internet.
It's just ridiculous.
It's crazy.
I mean, I know we know there's an element of gamesmanship with some of them, but
so, no, really.
But when he's getting basically throttled and thrown to the floor,
you know that's why he does the fist thing on his forehead, so that when he does fall forward, he lands on his hand and not his forehead.
Well, yes, it's true. Okay. Okay, well let's get on with the review of 2018.
It's been
you know, it's been our first full year in the Premier League, and it's been a good start. Well, let's start with January. And can anyone remember who scored our first goal of the calendar year?
First goal of the calendar year.
Glenn.
No.
Oh, hang on. No, just throw that one out there. It was all this. I reckon it was Solly March.
No, it was
Discredo.
No, it was not.
Okay.
Knockhart.
It was Anthony Knockhart in the 2-2 draw with Bournemouth, which got the season the year underway.
I was thinking of when hang on, here.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking Solly March at Bournemouth was okay.
And then we were lucky enough to get Crystal Palace in the FA Cup at home, and it was the first time that VAR was used in this country.
Oh blimey! Did some people kick off about that with Glenn's last minute winner? It might have hit his hand. Well, no, so it didn't.
No.
Well, actually, to be fair, Palace fans on social media afterwards were saying, "Look, you know, one is Glenn Murray's. Two, it doesn't matter because three, we were rubbish. Let them go through. Yeah. Who cares?"
But it was a rare goal from Dale Stevens, and as you just
Captain
mentioned,
Stevens that day,
and Glenn Murray saw us through. Then that was followed by what was described by many as the worst performance of the season, as we went down 2-0 at West Brom.
Not that one.
Hang on, in that case, very quickly. Talk us through it without
really?
Swearing.
If you've got toilet, sewer,
unflushed,
festering cesspit.
Why is that? I've now just gone really, really nervous.
Yes.
Stop it. Okay, point taken. It was that bad. Hang on, I wasn't at that game, and I haven't seen it. But was it as bad as Huddersfield later?
It was worse. It's the most angry I've ever left in a
Yeah,
ground.
I agree.
What happened then? Just couldn't string passes together? What was it? I mean, were West Brom any good? Or
we made them look good. Yeah. And West Brom were. And
it was two headers, wasn't it?
When I used to, it was two headers from the set pieces. West Brom hadn't won in something like 14 games.
But this is West Brom under Pardew.
This is West Brom under Pardew.
And it was the only game they won under.
The one game that they won under Pardew in the league was against us. And we were furious. The defence was all over the place. We conceded from set pieces. But the thing is, the worst thing about it was there wasn't even any effort. I use the phrase tummy tickling. We literally went to West Brom. We rolled over like a little puppy and went, ooh, and they did. And West Brom just went, ooh, aren't you a cute little boy? And then we left.
It was awful. And we got the train back to Euston. And the same bunch of QPR fans that had been to Burton, I think, were sat next to us. And they made the mistake of asking us how we got on.
Oh, yeah. And it was the longest train journey for them ever.
They said, "Do you want a beer, mate? You need it."
Okay. Well, that was that game of course. It was followed by.
How did we miss all this on the Albion Raw first time round, or did we just have to sort of like blank it out?
Probably had to blank
it out. We did completely ignore it. I think
it was
awful. I think we talked about the weather or had wine and cheese or something. It was something like that.
It was bad.
That game was followed by, on paper it looks bad, but we left the Amex actually quite happy after a 4-0 defeat, which was against Chelsea.
And we should have had two penalties, maybe even three.
Shorto's probably best game in an Albion shirt,
yes.
That one.
Then we went through to the fifth round of the FA Cup with a Glenn Murray goal, seeing us pass Middlesbrough, and ended the month with a 1-1 draw at Southampton. In transfer news, we saw the arrival of Jurgen Lacadia and the return of Leo Ajoa. Victor Gyökeres also arrived, and Jamie Murphy went out to Rangers.
Yeah, interesting month. Yeah, so when it's cold and you're not playing well, good God, it does not make you feel miserable, doesn't it?
We should be looking to outperform last January.
Yeah.
There was a really
I think so.
It was a really poor month for us.
Well, beat Palace. Even beating Palace doesn't actually save it, does it?
But the sort of joy of that was taken out by the fact there was like nobody there. It was only about, 14,000, which I was really surprised.
Well, it was straight after the nonsense from the end of
November. It was definitely a hangover from that. People were just sick of it. Of the
always ultras.
But that was great, though. I certainly enjoyed the manner in which we won that game.
Yeah.
That was certainly good.
They only had one decent
I loved the groans on the concourse before when they did the draw. And it was Middlesbrough away.
It was immediate. have a look and see what you could have won.
Both teams said, "I'm not coming out." Got me to stay in the room.
Yes, I forgot about that. It was the Monday, wasn't it? Yes.
It was. But so, I mean, it was frustrating. And when Leo Ojoa came back, I can't remember how I felt about that. Really, I mean, it was.
I think it marked out that because Chris Hughton hadn't managed to snare the strike he was after the previous summer in the form of Florin Andone, it showed that. It wouldn't say it was a desperate thing, but it meant that we had some backup, albeit the backup was in the same style as what Glenn Murray can do. Whereas, obviously, you know, fast forward to the end of the year now, we know that Andone and now Lacadia can offer something different. But it was a little bit of papering over the cracks.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong,
he's always
going
to put a shift in, and we know what Leo Joa could do. But you got to realise this was a case of, right, OK, let's see if we can sort of limp over the line a little bit.
Yeah, but Leo was came back a better player than the one that went away, and his link-up play was much, much better than Glenn's.
He was more technically astute, yes.
But, I mean, he just didn't get really the opportunities to really shine this time around.
It was kind of a little bit of papering over the cracks.
I agree, but I think it also said that no other Premier League club came in for him, and I think he's plying his trade in Mexico.
Yeah,
he is
now, yeah.
So... you know, and I'm surprised that someone like a Cardiff say something, that even a Cardiff or someone like that hasn't sort of snapped, because he's won the league, for crying out loud, so he's not.
Well, he was the leading. Yeah. Wasn't he the leading scorer the year before Leicester won the?
Yes, he was. Yeah.
But I mean, we don't know what goes on went on behind closed doors. Maybe people did come in for him and he just didn't want to.
Yeah, could be. Yeah.
You know, he loved here at Brighton, loved at Leicester. You know, he didn't want to maybe sully that, and maybe he just wanted to go back to South America.
Well, I suppose he had a very good 4-6 years in England. Yeah, I mean, you know, exactly. There's a lot of people that, you know, they come out here from overseas.
That's true.
And do not have a good time. He was, exactly. You know, he got to the playoffs. Mm. He won a league title. You know, it's not bad.
That's
going.
Not bad going. Okay. And of course, he does Speako de Lingo. Huh?
It does.
It does.
Well, yes, Espanol.
Okay, let's move on.
That was worse than AD reading out one of the shirts of the week.
Oh, you haven't seen this week's now.
Oh no, it's February. Like, get on with February.
Is it right? Okay, February.
Did anything happen?
Okay, we started the month at home to West Ham, where Jose Izquierdo started his one-man campaign to score the goal of the season in our 3-1 win. He then scored, and in my opinion, an even better one in the 1-1 draw at Stoke. Jurgen Lacadia made his debut and scored in our 3-1 FA Cup win over Coventry, and there was another Lacadia goal in our biggest win of the year over Coventry. Over Swansea. There was also goals for Glenn and Anthony Knockaert in that 4-1 win. Now, it was a brilliant month for us, actually, February. I mean, it was...
I thought you just said nothing happened.
No, we did. But Jose Izquierdo's... That goal against West Ham was picture book, but the one against Stoke, for me...
Well, if we're going to have the debate about AJ has just said what his best goal of 2018. So we've been asking everyone on social media what it is that they. We've got four questions. We're going to ask for the best goal, the best performance, best moment, and the player of the year, the calendar year. Right, let's do the best goal. Now, AJ's just said what he thinks. Andy, let's have your best Albion goal of 2018.
I think my favourite Albion goal of 2018 is actually, ironically, one I wasn't there to witness because I was at a festival.
But of course you were.
It was, but it was Glenn Murray's flick in against Manchester United.
Okay.
That's really not an easy goal to score. That's just an absolute bit of pure improvisational skill. And that was like a top quality goal against a decent goalkeeper from tight angle with very little time to do it, and the keeper quite close to him.
And the fact that he got in front of his man.
It was described as Glenn Murray ghosted in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just...
His hair might be ghosty, but...
Not on the face of it the most spectacular goal, but I just think in terms of technical effort and individuality, I just really like that goal. There's something about it. I mean, it's quite hard. We scored quite a few good goals this year, so...
Okay, so Murray against Manu.
That would be mine.
Marcus?
My one will be... it's going to be Andone v Palace.
Why is that?
Frankly. Why? Because... He just
we
kept
might know the
running.
Answer, but I want to hear it from you.
It's just the way he kept running. We're up there. It was 2-0 up already, so there is some context around it. And it's, you know, the ball just comes out, and he just runs, and he'd keep running.
Like
and
a lost cause,
thinking,
wasn't it?
And we're just thinking, what's going on here? And he just kept running and running, and it just seemed like he just kept running.
Like Forrest Gump.
He just kept running and running and running and running, and it's like, and then, you know, he got round a defender, and he's like, no, oh, and then obviously, and then he tucks it away, and
it's
like,
this is the 4th minute of injury time.
I mean, it's a 4th minute of injury time.
And the fact is, a lot of people missed it because they'd already gone to the bar.
Exactly, we're down to 10 men. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. So maybe, you know, it's so, but it's just the fact of sheer for me, whereas Andy is right about the Glenn Murray goal for its sort of technical brilliance, this one was just sheer effort alone.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was a little bit of skill at the end. Sheer effort alone.
So was it the world-class pass from Bernardo that really sort of helped it?
It could very well into the touchline. Yeah, but, you know, hey-ho, so what? It's an assist.
Okay,
so.
Alan, okay, your goal.
So, yeah, I'm going with you, Adi. I think that the Izquierdo goal against Stoke, I mean, I think that, you know, we're a bunch of people who do kind of underappreciate a team goal a little bit. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, I absolutely loved. Marcus is right. In terms of context, I'm going to say that my favourite goal was Andoni against Palace, but the best goal was Izquierdo against Stoke. It was the way that we played and Stoke got nowhere near us.
I mean, you there's an often used analogy that, like, if Messi had scored it, but they wouldn't hear the end of it. But it was that kind of goal that Messi scores, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And it was just like boom. And I remember sitting there at the time.
The interpassing.
I mean,
changing my moment of the year now. Actually.
Okay, come to that.
But the first pass from Solly, I thought, where's that going?
It was going a long way out. I'm thinking you're doing the sideways thing again.
And but then just like I mean, it was like you said, it was with Andoni's, it was like run Forest, run. But Izquierdo's run, just it was just that number of 1-2s going through that and just getting through to that finish. It was just absolutely a joy to watch.
Okay, so we asked everyone on social media, and 7 goals were nominated. 3 got 1 nomination each, which was Glenn Murray against Arsenal, which was basically a carbon copy of Gordon Smith's FA Cup final goal, did score. Yeah. Lukaku against Arsenal last week, and Gross against Man U. I think not necessarily the best goal, but probably arguably one of the most important.
Yeah.
Murray against Man U was well nominated. Izquierdo against West Ham, as you were saying about trying to get the player, the goal of the season effort.
Well, he just did it in February. It was both of them were in
Absolutely.
February.
Absolutely. Then second is Izquierdo against Stoke, but by quite a distance, Andoni against Palace. One, probably because people only remember the last 5 minutes anyway. But two, I think, you know, the context and the effort. And I think it's also the fact we haven't seen a goal like it.
No, exactly.
From any Brighton player for years, if ever.
It was a joyous moment. I mean, it was incredible. You just couldn't believe you were watching it.
Yeah. No. It was like, go on.
He never looked like he was going to score when he first got hold of the ball, took on the defender. And both of the defenders were absolutely
pony. Well, they were both on yellows at the time. And it made Tompkins look an absolute donkey. Yeah.
But it's one of those weird goals where normally you have your default goal celebration of it was. But it was just the most people would, rather than going were just laughing.
It was
so funny.
Oh no, they were laughing, but believe me, we went absolutely
loopy. I mean, you know,
loopy.
I mean, we were there for the West Ham and Stoke goal. Okay. For Izquierdo,
absolutely. Okay, so not Solly. Tell us about March.
I was just going to say 2 goals for Lukaku in February as well. So I mean, which is
we're settled. He's a decent player.
Okay, March. Okay, the month started with a visit of Arsenal, who went home with nothing as we finally got some points against one of the top 6. Another goal for Glenn, and Lewis Dunk notched the only goal by a defender last season.
Assisted by a defender.
It was, yeah. A 2-0 defeat followed at Everton, where Anthony Knockaert saw red. And then our first FA Cup quarter final since 1986 also ended in a 2-0 defeat at Man United. The month ended with us being outfoxed by Leicester in another 2-0 defeat at the Amex. So
it was
a bit of a May month, wasn't it?
Underwhelming March, wasn't it?
But I mean, let's talk about the FA Cup then, because I mean, I this season I would be absolutely delighted to have a run. I mean, obviously we've got Bournemouth next week, and hopefully we can get.
You know, full well that if we get past Bournemouth, we're going to have an equally dull away draw. I mean, you just have to ask yourself, what's the point?
I want to win the FA Cup.
I'd like to win the FA Cup just to have some silverware so we can finally have something over Palace that is not. Yeah. We've won the cup.
Can you imagine Houghton doing a dance at Wembley if we score? No, you can't.
I know for a fact that Paul Barber would absolutely desperately wants to do well in the FA Cup this year as well.
Okay,
it's a great aspiration for us. I think in terms of like actually achieving something concrete other than just merely preserving our Premier League status, the FA Cup, you know, why can't we get to the final? You know, you need to work your way through the early rounds and then take your chances against the top 6's reserve sides at the end. But you know, I think, yeah, we could go for it. And also, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what happens in the transfer window with the comings and goings of some of our under 23 players. But I mean, there's a couple of those guys that I really want to see play for the Albion, and I know that maybe AD might think it's sort of weakening the side, but I think maybe giving someone like Aaron Connolly.
I'm desperate to see Aaron Connolly
giving Aaron Connolly, for instance, the chance to play, because I think he would grab it. He's so hot at the moment.
If you're good enough, you're old enough.
We don't know. That's the point. We don't know if he's good enough. That's the whole point here. We're playing a Premier League side in the FA Cup. If we're playing a third division side, likelihood of him playing is going to be vastly increased.
If it was Lincoln away, like it was a couple of years ago, he probably would have started. In fact, he would be first name on.
But we didn't know. You didn't know that about Michael Owen. You didn't know that about James Milner.
We are talking about exceptional talents here.
But we don't know he's not.
Actually, we did know about that about Michael Owen at 16. We already did. I mean, he was lashing them in, like, you know, for fun. And don't get me wrong, Connolly's doing really, really well. But don't forget, there is an enormous chasm between what the under 23 is doing and what the Premier. That's not to say he hasn't breached it. He hasn't, you know, made that leap yet.
But in the way that the clubs look at these competitions now, this is what they're for. This is how you help these players make the step up. And otherwise, what's the point of having him here?
What's the point of having him in the academy? He'll make the step up
when the club feel he's ready.
I'm sure that if they give him a chance, they feel that he is ready.
But don't forget, Bournemouth are a Premier League side and are in a similar position to us, in as much as they probably would like an idea of silverware, so they might give it a go in the FA Cup. It's not as though we can rely on Eddie Howe putting out a sort of like a second 11 for that. So,
but then you look at our second 11 now, it's probably what our old first team was.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about Anthony Knockaert and that sending off at Everton. It kind of like brought something to a head. I mean, we talked about it on the show, haven't we?
We did.
We kind of figured that he wasn't quite himself and he hadn't really
made public later in the year.
Yes.
But
that sending off kind of brought it all to a head.
Publicly, yes.
Yeah.
And you know, we all saw that, and actually, weirdly enough, we'll talk about it when it comes to April. That 3-match ban seemed to do him the world of good.
Yes, when he came back, he actually played really well. Because I thought after that sending off, that's it, he's done.
But with mental health issues, these things are an ongoing process, and it's not to say that, you know, he is done. I'm certain he would still be having, you know, the sessions, the counselling, and whatever it is that's needed to actually keep him on the even keel that he needs to operate at. But let's not get too far into that realm.
But we haven't really seen a really decent performance from him this season, but we'll talk about that a little later on. Okay, let's move on to April. Okay, the month got underway with Huddersfield visiting and going back with a point after a 1-1 draw. Solly March scored in a game, also saw Davey Prepper sent off. That was followed by a trip to Selhurst where we gifted Palace a 2-goal lead and eventually went down 3-2 with Glenn Murray and
Esquerdo
scoring.
Was the only one of the five that was any good, because the rest were defensive howlers.
Oh, they were. Schlotto, that was the sort
of. Was that Lucardia put the ball in for
Esquerdo? He set up the first one, which would have been Esquerdo's goal.
Esquerdo scored the second one. Glenn Murray lashed in closely for the first one.
Lucardia definitely set up a goal, but he kind of went missing in defensive duties. Yeah. But again, the team, that was a weird day out, because, you know, Schlotto decided, that was a game where I think it did it for Chris, whereas Schlotto was very good against Chelsea and he'd had a couple of good games. I think that game did it for Schlotto after that.
I'm just wondering if he was still recovering from having been battered against Arsenal. Do you remember that?
Indeed. But it was, you know, he hasn't really featured. Well, we know he hasn't featured since. No.
But that was a game where, that Palace game was also a game where Berham Kael came in and was absolutely magnificent in that game.
He was, yes.
Well, it was frustrating because for the last hour we were the better team. Yeah. But it was too little too late, really.
Yeah.
I mean, we just, you know, we should have got at least an equaliser out of it. But we just gave ourselves too much to do with two goal deficits.
Mm. So what else happened, AD?
Right, Spurs were the next.
Not rant too much.
Yeah, Spurs were the next visitor to the Amex, where we got another point after a gross penalty levelled the score. That was Pascal taking over penalty duties from Glenn in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then a goalless draw closed out the month at Burnley.
That was a really gritty, determined 0-0 draw at Burnley. I mean, I went up for that, and that was a game where they did go with a "we're not going to lose this" because Burnley were a good side last year. Listen, yeah. I mean, they're not doing well defense, this year, but last year they were a tough, organised, typical Sean Dyche team, gritty. You know, all those sort of words.
No Dalek impressions, please.
Yeah, quite. I mean, there was a couple of times where we cleared that ball off a line. In a similar way to the Stoke game, where
Banks' save from. Matty Ryan.
Yes, that's
game.
Right. Yeah. And there was a sort of goal mouse grab. And again, it's similar to Stoke. That was a game where it was like, we can't lose this against these guys.
Yeah, that was a really good performance. So we came away from that.
Point gain.
Okay,
Less said about the Burnley crowd and Bolton.
Yeah. Moving on. Yeah. Okay, so May then. We went into May still looking over our shoulder, and with Man United, Man City, and Liverpool still to play. Fortunately, Pascal Gross rendered the last two games dead rubbers after his goal beat Man United. A 3-1 defeat at the Etihad and a 4-0 reverse at Anfield closed off the season.
It's ironic that actually it was the game against Arsenal that secured our survival.
We didn't know that at the time.
So it's actually the
game against Man U is one of those that's actually sort of people have actually highlighted as one of their performances of the season. So a second question we asked of everyone, just before we go on to Shirt of the Week, was what was your best Albion performance of the year? So let's go around the other way. Marcus, what was your favourite Albion performance of 2018?
Against Palace so recently, it's got to be. It can't be. I love Brighton Palace games because they seem to have the upper hand on us most of the time. Well, I hate them. No, I do. I hate the games. But you know, when you win like we did then, I mean, I'm still buzzing from that, quite frankly.
Okay, Andy?
Yeah, well, I was so tempted to vote for the Palace game for the very same reasons. I mean, what can you say? That it's just but you know, you said it. I think that performance against Manchester United at the end of last season, knowing what the last two games were, knowing that a win would do it at home, the team grew up.
Yeah.
Got the job.
Knockhart was on fire that
got
day.
Got the job done. I mean, you know, United, you could say whether they were playing well at the time or not, it doesn't really matter. The pressure was on us to get it done and to take this thing out of the last two games, and we did it. Absolutely brilliant performance from the Albion.
I'm kind of thinking, actually, it was only the last game, but the Arsenal games left me purring a little bit. Mm-hmm. The performance against Chelsea, despite us losing 4-0, I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. But you've got to go with either one of the Man United games, where our performance was just absolutely brilliant.
Okay, on social media, there were 5 nominations. One person did say the game against Spurs, which was a decent performance. You know, we bunked
our
ideas
up. It was
kind of
in there, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. Actually, then the in fourth place was of those 5 that were nominated was the May game against Man U. I think it was more the result, and we'll come to the best moment later. Mm-hmm. Then it was the game against Arsenal, very good performance. The game against Man U this season, which we haven't come to yet, but the game against Man U where we actually went 3-1 up at half time.
Yeah.
But the favourite best performance of the season was the one you chose, Marcus, the one against Palace. And even then, it was just the first half. Because the second half, we just, you know, went on damage and limitation. And Palace, it was like they were throwing fluffy teddy bears at us.
Yeah, but it was brilliant. We dug in. Okay.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, here on 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB and our podcast. As you all know, this show is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and as usual, we thank Phil Shelley for his fantastic continuing support.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Phil.
Phil's actually
thank you, you two.
Thank you, Phil.
Cheers, Phil.
And Phil has
Dale's
given
grateful
us...
for you not giving him a lift anywhere.
But this is Phil's shirt of the year, and this is what he has to say. Oh, actually, describe the shirt, actually, sorry.
Okay, well, it's basically a white body, and then we have a repeating pattern of two sets of black and green stripes punctuated with two columns of black and green stripes. Punctuated with again more black and white stripes, followed by a green and black
like
and white
coat.
Checkered pattern all stuck inside. I think I can guess what this is.
This is 3 colours, isn't it? It's green, black, and white.
Yeah. So I'm going to go for Nigeria.
football kit.
That it is the correct African answer, Mr. Bass. Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, it's number 14. Does that mean it's Leon Bulligan's shirt?
No. Okay. This is what Phil has to say. The most talked about shirt of 2018 should be instantly recognisable, but it was apparently a throwback to a shirt from 1994, which is this one. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I see the link, but here you go. Can you see obviously the Nigeria shirt from which they wore in the World Cup this year was the one he's talking about. Yeah. The 1994 shirt worn by Nigeria in the 94 World Cup was the influential Astani shirt worn by Nigeria at the 2018 World Cup. That shirt this year was made by Nike, and it had over 3 million pre-orders after it was worn in the pre-tournament warm-up game against England at Wembley. Fake versions of the shirt were fetching over £100 on eBay, and markets all over the country were selling moody copies. Known as the Super Eagles, Nigeria played their first official matches in 1949, a series of friendlies in England against the likes of Bromley, Dulwich Hamlet and South Liverpool. Brilliant. Before their debut on the international stage, which was a 2-0 victory over Sierra Leone. Since then, they've competed in the African Games, the African Cup of Nations, the Olympics, and probably most memorably when they played the World Cup in the USA in 1994 and rose to the number 5th ranked side in the world. Most caps are shared by goalkeeper Vincent Enyema, and he spent most of his career in Lille in France, and Joseph Yogo made his name at Everton. Both of them played 101 times for Nigeria. They play home games at the 30,000 capacity Godswill Akabayo International Stadium in the city of Oyo. And of course, we have a current link to the Super Eagles with our very own Eagle Slayer. Hey. Leon Balogun, who has made 26 appearances for his country. Another links, Inyuma Tong scored her first goal for the Albion against Arsenal in November, and a crowd favourite, Adi Akinbaye, won a single cap in 1989. Tuber Akram is also of Nigerian descent, but we have nothing to say about him. Okay, thanks very much for that, Phil. So let's get on. Let's go June, July. We're doing that one together. The mid-season break started with Connor Goldson leaving to join Stephen Gerrard's Rangers Revolution alongside Jamie Murphy, who made his move permanent. Liam Balogun became our first new signing and was followed by Florin Andoni, Yves Bissouma and Bernardo. Tim Krul went to Norwich and Nicky Mempar went to Bristol City, so we needed two new goalkeepers. So in came Jason Steele and David Button. We also announced a friendly against Sporting Club Portugal. August then, the friendly against Sporting Club de Portugal is cancelled. And Nantes became a last minute replacement. That was weird, wasn't it?
I think you saw it happen. You saw it coming though, didn't you? Because they had a load of players cancel their contracts because the violence they received by their supporters for not getting to the Champions League, but also they also had a pre-arranged commitment at the same weekend. So either someone didn't do their due diligence at the Albion or Sporting Club of Portugal just wanted to muck us about. But whatever happens, I think it was kind of coming that game wasn't going to go ahead and that we needed a replacement.
Okay. But most gutting out of all of that news there was the departure of Connor Goldson. I was devastated by that. I was just really hoping. I mean,
don't you want to be happy for the lad?
Of course I want him happy and I want him to see him do well, but I just think he could do better. I know Rangers are a big club and they're playing in front of 50,000 crowds and everything, but it's the Monkey Tennis League. And, you know,
in Europe and
I just think that he could do...
Yeah, but he's a young player and he was never going to get in ahead of Duffy and Dunk, whereas I think someone like Balogun, who's a little bit older and realises his chance will come, but, you know, Connor would just want to play football at that age.
Yeah, good move for him. Hope he does well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and as Tom's told, he has been doing very well, and the Rangers fans can't believe he's playing for them. Actually,
which is good news.
And out of obviously those signed, the Florin Andoni one was amazing.
Well, someone we've been chasing for over a year.
Well, last year we bid £17.5 million for him, and we signed him for 5. So you know, win-win.
Happy,
yes, absolutely.
Okay, so August then we saw Martin Montoya join for Valencia and Percy Tail come in and then go out on loan. Sam Baldock joined Reading and Yuri Skalak went to Millwall. Tom Hemed and Ollie Norwood went out to QPR and Sheffield United on loan. The season kicked off in lacklustre style at Watford before United were beaten again at the Amex with Glenn Murray, Shane Duffy and Pascal Gross scoring the goals. A narrow defeat at Anfield was followed by us going out of the League Cup at home to Southampton.
That was good fun, that Man U game, wasn't it?
It was brilliant. Yeah, I enjoyed that immensely.
We didn't exactly drive the final nail into Mourinho's coffin, but we certainly sort of like got the tape measures out for him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, looking at just to fast forward to now, I mean, if you're a United fan or member of their board, you've got to be looking at their squad and thinking, why weren't you playing like this before? It's just, it can't all come from Mourinho. You've got to have some sort of professional pride, surely.
Yeah, player power, mate. They didn't like him.
There's that, and there's also the fact that the pantomime, you know, with when you got Manchester United, if you sort of like read the BBC Sports Twitter, they are slightly obsessed with Manchester United. So when did I say slightly? I meant way over obsessed to the point of, you know, sort of perverted stalking / illegal. So you've got this ridiculous circus being played out in public. You know, Mourinho, you know, he looks like this. What's he thinking? You know, what he looks like that. He says this. He does absolutely everything is described in the minutest detail.
And it became a pantomime, though, didn't it?
Boring. But yes, that is a decent enough squad that actually should be higher than they are. They weren't playing well. Don't care what the problem is. They've identified that they think that Mourinho is it. Then in that case, then fine, let them get on with it. But above and beyond that, I mean, if Brighton had this and had this pantomime playing out, it wouldn't be playing out to such a huge, ridiculous thing.
Okay, well, moving on then. Okay, so that was the Man United game that we did win that, the first home game of the season. So bookended last two home games against
Three
Man United.
Three home wins on the league on the trot against Man United. Going back to 1982, admittedly.
And of course, that goal from Glenn Murray, which was it provided a fantastic moment.
Absolutely.
Now, let's talk about a moment of 2018. Al.
Absolutely. Now, let's go round the room first. Before I sort of, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 nominations. So, Adi, let's have your best moment.
If we had a webcam in here, what would I be doing now?
Something to do with Glenn.
Okay, right. So what was your best moment then?
Glenn's 100.
Okay. Which actually is therefore a new suggestion, because no one else has suggested that. And I was thinking about that on the way in, knowing that no one had actually put it. I'm thinking, why hasn't Glenn's 100th been nominated? So, Marcus, there's no way you're not going to put that up now, are you?
I wasn't going to say Glenn's 100, much as I love him. But best moment for me would have been probably ensuring our survival against Man United last season, actually, as a moment, because that was, as you say, getting the job done. And finally, like Andy said, we'd arrived in the Premier League. Took a while, to be fair, but we finally manned up and realised we should be there, instead of taking selfies with the opposition players and swapping shirts and all that nonsense that was going on at the beginning of the season, acting like tourists.
Touch of Craig Noon saying that I used to...
I used to do his roof.
Andy?
Picking a single moment out of this year is really difficult, because there are so many moments and different sort of moments. And but I think in terms of like the pure emotion of just... And I have actually changed my mind, because I had... because and this is not because it was like the greatest moment of the year or whatever, but just like the way that you felt as it happened... In that time, is Matty Ryan's penalty save against Stoke, and Lewis Dunk's subsequent save that saved it. Because it was a year of absolutely diabolical away games, West Ham aside. I mean, they were basically trashed the whole year. Mm. That game was really entertaining. We saw that fantastic goal from Izquierdo, and we played really, really well in it. And you just thought, oh my God, we're going to throw this game away
at the last minute.
And I
would have absolutely, and it wasn't even a penalty for a start. And I would have been absolutely gutted to have walked away with nothing. And we walked to, and then that save was just brilliant, and we walked away feeling like we'd won, and it was a terrific away day. Absolutely brilliant day.
So very quickly on social media, amongst those that we've also, because you two have actually come up with two that haven't been mentioned so far, there's the Izquierdo celebration after he hit that worldie against West Ham,
where
Ryan came out, went flying past him. beating Palace was up there. The Balogun goal itself, and quite right too. Against the Andoni goal was also a great moment.
Balogun goal was mine.
I just didn't want to pick the Palace game because I'll keep going Palace.
But the best moment was the final whistle against Manchester United. That's what most people went with. And yes, we had a few. Doesn't beer taste a lot better?
Yeah.
At moments like that,
it did after the Palace game.
Okay. For me, I just thought that the end of that going back to the United game for me that was as much fun as the promotion clinching game against Wigan in terms of not
out. Okay, moving on then to September. The month got underway with a 2-2 draw at home to Fulham. Murray scored twice. And then another Desmond at St Mary's with Duffy and Murray scoring in that game.
We were hopeless in that first
half. That was awful, that first half.
Spurs came in knocking and went home with a 2-1 win. Anthony Knockhart scoring the goal in the 90th minute. And the month ended with a 2-0 defeat at the Etihad. I mean, that when you look at seeing Fulham now do you think that is? That Pascal Gross penalty miss, if that goes in, we go on to win that game comfortably.
That was 2 points. That was a game where we haven't had many this season, but that was one of those 2 points dropped, definitely, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. We set out wrong. We gave them too much respect. The usual suspects, giving the ball away, all the stuff that we're guilty of and still are to a certain extent. But that was why we gave Fulham as much respect as we did. Mm. I don't know. Arsenal, I can understand it. Man U, I can understand it. Fulham. No, come on.
But I mean, it was not. I'm not going to talk too much about that Southampton game. But nice to see another goal from Shane Duffy, which basically after only scoring one goal,
we were in green. That's why. Yeah.
But only scoring one goal from a defender last season, we were on four now,
something like that.
Four. So yes. Duffy's got three, actually five, because Dunk's got two, and Duffy's got three. Isn't
there
it?
There you go.
So so into October then, we start with the month with a 1-0 win at home to West Ham. Glenn Murray scoring the only goal in that game, and then got our first win on the road for nearly a year at Newcastle with Berham Kayout notching that winner. We made it three wins on the spin by beating Wolves at the Amex with Glenn Murray again scoring his 100th goal. Which I was absolutely delighted about, because I had a funny feeling it was going to hang over
just
him.
Just a week after a week after being knocked out against Newcastle.
And the other big news, of course, in October was that Lewis Dunk got an England call-up.
Hey.
Yeah, well done for Lewis.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to wrap up with it, because this is recent history now.
Absolutely.
November, the month didn't start well with a 3-1 defeat at Everton with Lewis Dunk scoring, and that was followed by a controversial 2-1 defeat at Cardiff. With their winner being
controversial / rubbish.
Leicester took a point back from the Amex with a late equaliser in a 1-1 draw, with Glenn Murray scoring again, and Lewis Dunk actually made his England debut against the USA. December, well, it's December now, and the month got underway with another win on the road, this time at Huddersfield, where we hadn't won since 2006. And I love the fact, whenever I'm typing Florin and Doni, it comes up as Florin and One.
Yeah.
it keeps trying to connect, spell check it. Florin and Doni marked his first start by scoring the winner in that 2-1 win, with Duffy also scoring. Palace came to Brighton and went home with their tails between their legs we won 3-1 in a game where we had 10 minutes for an hour.
Yes. Sorry, go on, carry on.
I didn't spit, and one scored the winner.
And one scored the third.
Then obviously Arsenal and so there you go. That was Arsenal. The year that was.
Well, okay. So in that case, to finish off, what we've all been asking you is, and I think we've got a few minutes to debate this. Who is your player of 2018, the calendar year? Adi, let's start with you, mate.
Lots to choose from. It's not Pascal Gross, because he hasn't turned up for the last half of the year, really. Shane Duffy is a nomination from me. I think he's been absolutely magnificent this year. Lewis Dunk.
Well, Shane Duffy is good at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and Lewis Dunk is always consistent, and he's going to be very popular in the vote, I'd imagine, on this one. But I'm probably going to have to go with Matty Ryan, whose consistency throughout the whole year, and he's just grown and grown in stature. And I like the fact,
even though you said he was tiny.
Yes.
Well,
you
said he was about 5 foot.
Did he? Was he?
I've eaten my words.
In the midget camp.
You don't know whether to call him Matty, Grumpy, Dopey, or
or Matty.
But I also like. I just love the fact that his interview after the Arsenal game.
Yeah. Be careful about what you know. If you're talking about the club's retaining policy.
I think he was very positive.
He said
I think
we should have won that.
We should have won that, in my opinion. Yeah. We should have won.
Absolutely. Right, Andy, who's your player of 2018?
My player of 2018 is Matty Ryan.
Right. Any particular reason above and beyond what AD just said?
It's been a very successful year and for the Albion. And for a team like us, it's one in the margins, and he's allowed all the other candidates and there are many candidates for player of the year, in my opinion, to do their job, because he just pulls the saves out. He keeps us in. I know it's his job, but by making those saves, he enables all the other players to maximise their potential. And I just think he's been an absolute rock. And I think you look at the improvement in teams like Liverpool, for instance. They've now got an actual goalkeeper, which means that all the good play that the front ten do is no longer wasted by some idiot just gifting the opposition
throwing
pass.
It in the net. Wow.
Same thing. Yeah, that was one of the key things for Man City to finally turn it around for them as well. I just think for us, he's an absolutely huge player. Okay. Huge player.
Marcus.
It won't surprise anybody to say that obviously I'm going to go for Glenn. Yes, everybody. Yeah, yes, that's right. Why? Because goals keep you in the league. And why? Because Glenn scores goals, and he did last season, and he's carried on this season. And even in the pre-season thing, I said Glenn Murray will be our top scorer this season. Yeah. And I still think that will be the case, because he is actually our only proven Premier League goal scorer we have on the books at the moment. And without him, whilst Matty Ryan and all the others have contributed, it is goals that keep you up. And there you go. So it's Glenn.
Okay, right. Well, social...
Ow. What about you?
Matty Ryan, for the reasons said above. I refer to...
Matty would be second for me.
About Matty is that, I mean, where Glenn... You're quite right that Glenn, you know, scores the goals and that gets the vital and gets the headlines for it. And this is why, on a certain level, Pascal Gross won player of the season last time, because of the stats, not necessarily because of his all-round qualities. It's just the stats. What you've got this time around is that I can't recall a game where Matty Ryan had a stinker. I can't recall one where he had a dropsy. And for that level of consistency, I can't look beyond it. That's not to say Glenn Murray hasn't stepped up. Of course he has. But he hasn't actually had the same level of consistency. Probably because the way we play. Yeah. It can't happen.
Yeah.
And the fact is that we're always going to be sort of like defending.
So the vote is that
a couple of people did say Gross and Stevens. A couple of people said Shane Duffy. But in third place is Lewis Dunk, which is actually quite surprising, because I'd have normally gone for him. But actually, bearing in mind... the way that Ryan's been playing, Lewis Dunk would have been my second place person. Glenn Murray would have been my third, but he was the vote for second place. But by a long, long way, it was our great Socceroo, who hates Palace, Matty Ryan.
He's the Albion Player
of 2018.
And he is going to be such a big miss for the next month.
Yeah,
I mean,
it worries me a bit today.
In Ben Roberts, we have an excellent goalkeeping coach who has improved. He improved David Stockdale, he's improved Matty Ryan. I see no reason why he shouldn't actually... We have the faith in David Button or Jason Steele, whoever it is that's going to get the nod today.
I suspect it'll be Button.
You know what's going to happen. We're going to lose by a dropsy, aren't we?
It could be.
In Ben Roberts, I have complete faith that actually he's coached those players properly. So, okay. But anyway, Matty Ryan is the Albion Royal Player of 2018.
There you go. That was the year that was. That was 2018. And as we look forward to 2019 and hopefully more success on the pitch...
Without Matty Ryan for the first month.
But congratulations to Matt. And we will miss you. Looking forward to having you back. And this has been the Albion Royal in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thank you to Andy Bass. Thank you to Marcus Hancock. Thanks to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham.
Travelling in a fighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? Where women glow and men wonder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better tell.